The Loud Draft Podcast is brought to you by Fresh Apparel Printing. If you have a band and want to sell merch at your next gig, Fresh Apparel has graphic artists on staff that can make your logo into a t-shirt within minutes. Have a business and need company apparel for your employees? Fresh Apparel has graphic artists on staff that can turn your logo into a t-shirt within minutes and embroider your logo onto a hat or a polo or whatever the hell you want with pinpoint precision, literal pinpoint precision. Listeners to the show receive 10% off any custom t-shirt or embroidery order. You use the promo code DRAFT. That's the promo code DRAFT. Fulfill all your custom clothing needs at FreshApparelPrinting.com today and use the promo code DRAFT. 3, 2, 1, blast off. Hey, 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 it's me, Uncle Dougie, with the Lock Draft Podcast. I got John Pugliese with me. We're March Madmen, and we got some shit up our sleeve this week. What's up, John?
Dougie, what's happening, my man?
Yeah, so I'm Tex Ags, man, big man on campus. It's going on right now, huh? You heard anything from them guys besides them celebrating?
They're going to love that. I expect tomorrow morning to hear a repeat of last Tuesday, kind of going through your clickbait that we were going after here and making sure that they have that on the mic and ready to go when I show up. So yeah. I expect Gabe to be holding true to his word on that one.
I tweeted at Gabe. I told him I'll accept Swami. I'll accept Miss Cleo. I'll accept, wow, there was one more I forgot. But I tweeted at him. I'll accept any of those as proper clickbait for me. You could call me Miss Cleo Dougie or whatever you want, Gabe. But, yeah, I told you guys, they could, two teams that could get got inside, and they got inside, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, A&M, they're showing that their front court's the best in the country right now. Kind of what we thought we would see all year that really hadn't come out. I mean, the fact that Rob Williams had 13, 14, and two or three blocks, I don't think the NCAA tournament statisticians did them any favors with his block shots. He blocked one with like his hip bone in the UNC game.
That's just stoke out.
Yeah, and Tyler, I mean, 14 and 15 versus Providence. I mean, those two combined, 27 and 29. You know, an incredible performance versus Providence. And then, you know, I don't think we can say enough about UNC and what they did against them. I mean, it's this for a stat? First 20-point loss in 102 NCAA tournament games for Roy Williams.
Oh, man. All I said is Luke May is going to get an example made out of him in that game, I think. I mean, you know he's exposed defensively. I thought Adnan Gilder and the rest of their backcourt can kind of contain what they were doing in the backcourt. That was kind of my secondary thinking of it. I mean, we all know nothing when it comes to picks, obviously, even though I have some picks on the board. But we're going to that's our Tex-Ag thing. I'm going to be listening live tomorrow. I listened to part of their show today, and then I got bad signal when I was driving in my car. I was going to see if they were going to holler at me today. But I did say Elite Eight for Texas A&M, and I had them playing Houston, which is a lot easier matchup because my whole concept of it was – if you can get got inside, Texas A&M was going to be the team I could pick. Michigan, not so much getting got inside with Wagner, but they could get Wagner in foul trouble, and then you got next stiff white guy coming in. So what's that guy's name? Hinky? I forget his name. Tinkle or whatever. He's like a bootleg Mark Donnell, you know. So, like, basically, I'm saying you could get got inside with those experienced guards, and that's the Elite Eight. That's where I took them to, and then I obviously had them losing to Gonzaga, who they can't get inside like they would normally with those other teams. But we got a fun game to play. I'm waiting to publish this diary of a March Madman. Basically, I wasn't really sure of how I was going to cover this since we're kind of a draft site. I mean, we are a draft site, but we're covering a college basketball tournament, which isn't always exact in science. So my idea was just to jot down random thoughts during the weekend, and I was just jotting them down all weekend. I think I got to 64. I only have 62 in my random numbers generator. So what we're going to do is kind of preview that article, and I'm just going to give you a preview of it, and we're going to use a random numbers generator and just whatever number it lands on, that's a topic we hit. So here we go, 1 through 62. We got number 37. That's going to probably be on a Saturday morning, late Friday. So let's see. Number 37 is, Virginia really missed DeAndre Hunter. What do you have to say on that, John?
Yeah, I mean, I would totally agree. I think more than anything, you see what Virginia's platform is when it comes to the way that they play. So, you know, the one thing about Tony Bennett is with his pack line, with the way that they play offensively, with the blocker mover, he doesn't get as concerned about matchups as a lot of coaches do. Yeah. So what you actually see is him showing up and doing the same thing that he always does, which worked in the ACC. So how wouldn't it work, you know, against UMBC? But that's what's great about March Madness. So, yes, they totally missed him. And, you know, obviously I think it's something that, you know, us as basketball people know that in the back of their mind, things changed for their team right when he was gone and when he, you know, got hurt. Definitely affected their mojo, if you will.
Right.
An incredible thing for us to see in our lifetime. And obviously there were definitely some issues with that UVA team and kind of their depth and balance.
Right. Well, when I noticed this was when I see Jerome and Guy guarding Jarris Lyles, I think that they could make some defensive adjustments where they would have put Hunter on him, who's probably considered their best overall defender. And I think he could get out on Lyles. Could have caused some problems on that shot, but let's be real. I mean, when you lose by 20, you're missing a lot more than DeAndre Hunter. It probably wouldn't have. I mean, it could have. Theoretically, it could have made a difference, but, I mean, they got their ass kicked, plain and simple, in the second half. So I really don't know how much it would have made a difference, but it was noticeable to me. So
100%.
Yeah. All right, let's spin the wheel again. And we come up with number 8. That's going to be an early one. Let's see what we got for number 8. That's going to be definitely on the first day. And it is Wright State should have been a 16 seed. And UMBC should have got the 14th. I will admit that I said that before. I'm not trying to get over on you guys. The first one, if we get one, or actually it's number 2 on here. UMBC is underseeded, in full disclosure. I have witnesses to hedge, but I am not that guy who says they actually picked UMBC to beat Virginia, but I did think they were underseeded as a 16 team. They have a player of the year in their conference that was a high major recruit and was thought by the staff at VCU to be like a big piece to what they were going to do when they brought him in, and it didn't kind of work out. But he's a high major talent that was at a low school. And I just thought UMBC was underseeded. There's a couple other teams I thought were underseeded. I'll mention them if we get them in our random numbers generator. But yeah, what do you think about the seeding of UMBC and a couple other things? Wright State, I thought they belonged on the 16 line. I guess it depends on the analytics.
Yeah, I mean, bear that out. Horizon League, yeah. Obviously Wright State wasn't number one in their league, so I would agree with you on that side of things. I mean, they were number they finished the regular season number two. The number one overall team, Northern Kentucky, lost to Cleveland State in their opening round game. So, you know, Northern Kentucky obviously right. wasn't going to be in. You know, that goes back to the argument of should the number one overall team in the regular season go in without the conference tournament, which is a whole nother show that we could probably do. But, you know, I think for me, Wright State, you know, ran into a really solid SEC team that they just didn't match up with well. And, you know, probably are they a 16? They didn't win the league. You know, sure. Maybe they should have been a 16, but I don't know that any of us could have planned for UMBC doing what they were doing. They finished second in their league as well. You know, they had to hit a shot in the final to beat Vermont. So I'm not sure that I would have switched those two, but you could make a case that Wright State shouldn't have been in a position to be a 15.
I just thought overall that
or
like
14. Were they a 14?
Yeah, they were a 14.
Yeah, so I mean, you could definitely make a case that they shouldn't have been a 14. I don't know that UMBC should have been higher. I think it was just an unbelievable game that we may never see again. But I would probably agree with you that they shouldn't have been a 14.
I just thought overall the 12 and even the 11 through 16 seeds were seeded a little bit poorly. We saw that with Arizona. Buffalo was not a 13 seed. We saw that with who's the other team that's coming to my head that you know, Loyola is not an 11 seed. And those are the first two things that come to mind. But, you know, when I saw Arizona draw Buffalo and there's 13 seeds like Greensboro and other teams out there, I was like, man, that is not going to be an easy game for Arizona. And it proved not to be. Yeah, so let's click the magic button of content again, and we will see the random number generator shows number 12, which is also going to be a Friday thing. And it turns out Loyola was underseeded, and God is on their side as always, and that helps. Tell me what you think about Loyola.
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back to you know, the idea surrounding the Missouri Valley. You know, we're talking about a league that every year since like 2010 has won their first round game. Now a lot of those were Wichita State, but Wichita State moved out of the Valley here this year and they lost their first round game. So I think it has a lot more to do with the Valley being an incredibly difficult league, even with the with Wichita State leaving and, you know, Valpo coming in. But at the end of the day, you know, I think it comes down just to a really strong league that Loyola dominated, that, you know, their losses, two of them were without their best players because of some injuries. And, you know, you saw a team that's very well coached right now that has bought in and that was kind of in a position to make a run. I mean, they beat Florida during the year. This is a good team, you know, and now they may not be filled with pros, you know, in the NBA sense. But they are filled with some really good players who have bought into Porter Moser's system.
Right. Yeah. Porter Moser and old Chaplin Jean, she was the star of the weekend pretty much. The thing with Loyola, an interesting stat I heard this morning, credit Gary Parrish and Matt Norlander on the CBS I Am College Basketball podcast, where they like to shout out Devin Downey. And so I'll give him a shout out for Devin Downey. But the Missouri Valley was ranked number 9 ahead of the Atlantic 10 in conferences in KenPom this year. They went through the top 10 in KenPom looking for the A-10 and where they were at as pertaining to if Danny Hurley was going to leave Rhode Island. And I was surprised to find out that the Valley was 9th by KenPom as strength of conference, and that's without Wichita State. So, I mean, the American was above them also, but It was a little bit surprising to see them ninth. They were right sandwiched between the A-10 and the Mountain West. Mountain West was 8, Missouri Valley, or the A-10 was 10th in a down year this year. So, yeah. Number 17, I dodged a bullet in my bracket. Was going to explode when Gonzaga went in with their win, but the committee matched Arizona against Buffalo and shaking my head. Gonzaga really, really, really underperformed in their first game. They're a Final Four team, and that it's coming out roses in the end for them right now because they kind of have basically the easiest path. And that whole side, we could see a Loyola in the finals. We could see a Nevada in the finals. That whole side besides Kentucky and Gonzaga and maybe one more team, I think, that I can think of as a team you would expect to be in the finals, possibly. Texas A&M is in that side also, you know. Like, there's a lot of teams that you would never dream of putting in a final while going out of bracket on that side, on the left side of the bracket, and it's bad news over there, and it's good news for John Calipari for all of BI itching he did about going to Boise.
Well, I the one thing I'll throw at you is I know Leonard Hamilton hasn't had a ton of success in the NCAA tournament, but when he is an underdog, he is 4-0 in the NCAA tournament.
Oh, really?
So when Leonard Hamilton and his Florida State team is an underdog, he is 4-0 in the NCAA tournament. So I know he hasn't had a ton of success, and I throw that out there. But they, you know, with the way that they're playing and the things that they were able to do against Xavier, Gonzaga, and they're kind of tough, you know, the tough road that they've had. I mean, you know, Wes Miller can really coach at UNC Greensboro, and Chris Holtmann is really good with some really good players. Okay. So I think, you know, Leonard Hamilton has shown based on that win against Xavier that, you know, they can give those guys at Gonzaga some issues, although Rui Hachimura and Tilly are really good, and Hachimura is playing really well right now. Yeah. Jonathan Williams is a beast, and the point guard's played really well. So, yeah, I like Gonzaga's trip here and their road. Yeah. I like them just like you do. Yeah. But I love it. And obviously, I think they lucked out a little bit as well.
Right. I like Trent Forrest for Florida State. He's one of the guys I like in a couple years. He's a 4-year guy I like. But really, they're one of the teams left. I did Blackboard. We'll get back into that later. But they're near the bottom of guys with pro talent that are left. It's basically Trent Forrest. It's Mann, and it's I'm missing the last guy. It's a freshman, MJ Walker. And that's it for their lockboard guys. So, you know, some other guys could step up and be in the postseason lockboard, but only Clemson has lower than 3. Clemson has 2, Elijah Thomas and Dante Grantham, who's not even playing. So it shows what kind of a job that Brad Brownell has done. You got anything on Brad Brownell before I go? Anyways, we'll go to the next one. Number 6, we're going to a lot of Friday morning. Number 6, we're going to do about 2 more of these, and then we're going to move on to the lockboard. Jonathan Williams III would be a first-round pick if he took free throw lessons from Rick Perry. Go.
You know, the one thing I would say, and this has to do with free throws in general, is as coaches, it's not like we're teaching these kids to miss. Yeah. Okay, so like, you know, there's been some talk about how terrible of a free throw shooting team Texas A&M is and how awful some of these guys shoot it from the line and this and that. I get it, and fans get frustrated.
Yeah. But I'm one of them.
Lack of trying. Yeah. You know, this is not something that coaches aren't working on, and they're not putting guys in pressure situations and practices. That's just not real life. So, you know, I although I may agree with that, you know, that alone, that type of free throw shooting is not going to be without a whole lot of dedication and practice. So right. I feel you. And guys who want to do it, I know it was his grandson shot that way at Florida last year.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. Go for it. But it's going to take you some time, energy, and some real determination to get that down.
No, for real. Yeah. And Jonathan Williams has always stuck out to me with that because of his style of play. He gets to the line a lot. And I love Jonathan Williams. I love him as a prospect. I think he's going to get drafted this year because of what he can do with his versatility in the front court. That's kind of, I have a Draymondometer, and Jonathan Williams is kind of, he has a high rating on a Draymondometer. I'm not going to go out and say, but I would say he's around in the sixes, maybe the high sixes in the Draymondometer with the way he can do different things. Now, his shooting is what is taking him away from being an 8 or 9 on that, the way he does things. So, and everybody's looking for the next Draymond Green. We've established this. Let me see how much time we got left here. We'll do one more, and if we could sneak another one in real fast, we'll do it. I like this segment. Number 17. But I don't want to give it all away either. This was also on Saturday. Oh, wait. I can't do number 17. They already did that stupid numbers generator. Anyways, number 22. This is early Friday. Oh, man, that sucks for Isaac Cotton. I remember this feeling. I had the same reaction with Kevin Ware, only Ware wasn't even close to the best player on his team like Haas. And I also watched a tearjerker E60 with Isaac Haas and his sister on Sunday morning. The unfortunate situation at Purdue, I'll call him Purdue today because Isaac Haas is a warrior. I can't believe he tried even.
Yeah, I mean, good for him, man. I mean, he has worked at an incredibly high rate and done some great things in his career and had a phenomenal year this year. And it's unfortunate. I mean, you know, it's a good thing they've got another 7-footer in the books. Right. You know, that obviously helps them a great deal. And I think that he'll come back and he'll be okay and he'll have a good career ahead of him. It's just too bad that it came at this time, and you feel for him because this is what, you know, you got people who haven't coached college basketball, you don't know the kind of effort and intensity that these guys put into this experience. It's about making the tournament for these guys, right. You know, like this is what they're moving towards. You know, that's why you go to play college
basketball. And a senior. I mean, like they show on that E60, they showed him breaking down on senior night because of what they did for his sister. Getting a GoFundMe page for that was a good piece by by Kate Fagan, ESPN. The Lafayette community, the West Lafayette community, raised $20,000 in 3 days on GoFundMe to get his sister a service dog because she has severe epilepsy, and it was just a really good E60 story done by Kate Fagan, and. The thing I would say is this is Matty Harm's time to shine. I have him actually rated, just because of his potential, about 10 or 15 spots higher than Isaac Haas. My thought on Isaac Haas is, I mean, this isn't really going to stop him. He's trying to play already. Like, so I don't think it's going to impede him. He's going to go in and he's from Hoax Bluff, Arkansas. It's a very... I don't want to call it a poor community, but a very, you know, modest community in the boondocks of Alabama. His dad works two jobs as a police officer, and he's worked odd jobs to keep them just through getting through school. And I was also kind of pissed off when I heard that they had to go through any clearing to get this service dog to Isaac Haas' sister with the NCAA, but that's how they roll. So we'll go with one more. We got time for one more. And I really like this. I wish I could do random number generator all day. It's my favorite thing in the world. Oh, 51. that's going to be probably the last day. So 51. Oh no. End of Saturday. Oh, 51. Chris Beard needs a raise.
I mean, we'll see what happens, man. I mean, he not only might need a raise,
he might need to go somewhere else. Be
at Texas here. Yeah. Shaka Smart takes the Louisville job like they've talked about here over the last couple of days.
Oh, really?
Chris Beard's done a great job. The Texas Tech program was not necessarily in the best of shape. He bounced around from Arkansas Little Rock, took the UNLV job for 17 days, went down back what he would call home to Texas Tech. I think this will be the interesting time for Texas Tech as a program. Can they keep Chris Beard happy? Can they give him what he needs to be successful outside of just this year? Are they paying his staff enough? Are they paying him enough? And will they be able to keep him around? I would think that they'll be able to. I mean, we're talking Big 12 money. We're talking a school that wants to compete and has had a taste of it for the first time in a while. I mean, Tubby did a decent job with them to get them back respectable after the Young Knight absolutely threw them in the toilet. But, you know, I do think that
Bob Knight has to be so ashamed. Oh, my God. Anyways, two things about Texas Tech. They need to keep – hopefully Beard can keep Zaire Smith there because he's been a revelation. Also, a very close to my heart story, Tommy Hamilton on that team. I have him ranked very low in the 400s in my board because Tommy Hamilton was a – I mean, Tommy Hamilton was going to be in the big men conversation with like Joel Embiid and in his high school days, and he just fell to injuries and
decided to go to DePaul
and decided to go to DePaul and got injured at DePaul. And, you know, who knows what could have happened if he was on his full game at DePaul, but it was really injuries to his feet and knees that took him out. And he's playing a huge role on this team, and I'm happy to see Tommy doing well. At least he was in a bad place because he was such a high ranked guy. I mean, since his freshman year in high school, he was being dubbed the next, you know, whatever, Greg Oden that could shoot, you know, and by the time he even got to his senior year, it was falling apart for him. So I don't really think he had much of a choice but to go to a DePaul or somewhere else. But for somebody with that much talent at that young of an age, I'm glad to see Tommy doing good. Shout out Tommy Hamilton, Whitney Young High School, Chicago. And one more thing, shout out Tyler Wideman, my boy from my hometown. Purdue won that game yesterday, but not for the lack of Tyler Wideman. I've been questioning kind of where I have him on my lock board in the 150 to 200 range. But the way he got out at the end of that game and got stops, and you watched the Purdue-Butler game, and at least the end.
Yeah, no, I mean, one of my best friends.
Yeah.
He's been coaching Tyler all year.
Yeah.
And Omar Lowry. I loved the way Tyler did some things. Him and his senior teammate, Keelan Martin, were terrific.
Yeah.
And felt for those guys because I thought that they played well enough to win that game.
Yeah, they did.
And, you know, loved watching them all year, which I spent a lot of time doing, supporting my guy. But, yeah, really, really great showing by Tyler.
Yeah.
Someone who I think, you know, he's going to make some money. He played with some energy, some enthusiasm, and that was fun to watch.
I mean, I've always thought of him as a Euro big, but if he can get out and what he did to P.J. Thompson, I know it's P.J. Thompson is not – you know, P.J. Thompson is not Devontae Graham. He's not Keenan Evans, whatever. But, I mean, he got out there and guarded like this was going to be the last game of his career, and he got a stop. He got a big stop. And if it wasn't for other things that other people did on the other end and some bad defense on the end too. But they were just going in a comeback. And shout out to you. From Schererville, Indiana, Pine Island. That's right around the corner. I just drove past it today. I thought about stopping in and seeing him. I haven't seen him in a while. So, shout out to T. I didn't want to just show up unexpected at his door, but I'll holler at him on my show, man. Tyler Wideman. Look out for it. Look out for him. So, anyways, we're going to go smooth transition here. Dougie's Lockboard 3.0, top 500 players in the country, came out right before the tournament. So, a lot of this is getting judged. I've been getting a lot of stuff on Twitter about, you know, oh, how could you have Zaire Smith number 96? You know, and it's just, you know, and it's coming from people who hadn't seen Zaire Smith until when they were tweeting me. So, like, you know, this is a pre thing. And for a guy like a guy on A&M like TJ Starks, he's not on this list. He will be on the postseason list for what he's done in this tournament and down the stretch for Texas A&M taking over as their point guard. Actually, Dwayne Wilson is on this list. And I kind of see them swapping positions. What I do with the Lockboard is I kind of, unless you're an elite four or five star freshman, you're going to have to work your way and we give seniors first chance because they're definitely gone. So, like, I mean, if you're better, you're better, but I'm giving seniors a little bit of a break. I don't want to say a break, but I don't know if you get where I'm going to, is that senior guys are going. So, you know, a guy like Dwayne Wilson, he could and very probably easily will be playing pro somewhere.
What I think is really good about the Lockboard, and I have very little to do with this, Dougie, obviously, but what I really like that you do with it is you make freshmen, you make sophomores beat out upperclassmen in it. Right. I think that's probably where you're going with this is it's up to those guys to dethrone guys from their spots that they're in. And I think that's, you know, what you're seeing with TJ Starks not being on. Obviously, he'll be one of the best freshmen or sophomores in the SEC next year, maybe the best returning point guard in the SEC. But, you know, given Dwayne Wilson kind of the benefit of the doubt there, he was the guy who was in charge of the team here from the start. And, you know, things like that happen. But I like what you do with it. I think it's great. So let's get talking.
Yeah, so the basic thing is, yeah, I'm giving Angel Delgado at 25. You know, he's that guy deserves to be up there above guys like my guy Hamidou Diallo, like my guy, like guys like Daniel Gafford, like Trayvon Duval. I think, you know, but there's obviously a balancing act that goes to it. You know, and then I have guys like Makai Ashton Lankford who could very well be up in the top 100 of this board next year. Now that Kyron Cartwright is out, is going to be graduating and gone, and he could be very well in the top 100. But right now, I think he still might outweigh Cartwright. But you know, I try to balance it the best I can. I have some numbers here. So there's 16 teams left. Of all the teams left, Duke and Kentucky have 8 players on the Lockboard, and they have a lot in the 152. So they're clearly the most talented teams. Arizona actually led the players on the Lockboard with 9. Those were a lot of DeAndre Ayton and then a lot of middling kind of guys that are on the fringe of second round being undrafted, like Alonzo Trier. Raleigh Alkins is up high also, you know, but a lot of those guys are freshmen like Brandon, like Sampson. Is it Brandon Sampson? Brandon Randolph. You know, Emmanuel Acott. Those guys are getting some potential points from down the line, but they're way down there. When you're looking at teams, Duke, Kentucky, Gonzaga, Kansas, Michigan State, Villanova, Texas A&M, and Louisville all have 7. So Texas A&M, though, is the most interesting case. They, by far, I kind of set the bar of borderline kind of NBA player. You're going to play in the NBA or not, somewhere in between the 150 and 180 range. I'm trying to perfect that so I could get a real line on it. But Texas A&M just has Robin Tyler in the top 50. When you're looking at a guy, a team like Kentucky, you're looking at, you know, four, I could tell you right now, at least four in the top 50, if not more. I think four in the top 34.
You have six, you have seven in the top 150.
Yeah, seven in the top 150. So, yeah, and Quad A Green will probably be in there next year. So, you know, yeah, I mean, Kentucky does what it does, and it's a double-edged sword with them. Things you have to say about the Lockboard? I know you respect all my awesome wisdom, but complaints. I ate a little crow. I specifically put Hamidou at 31 because I can't justify guaranteeing him a contract in the NBA right now.
Yeah. I don't have any complaints for you, Dougie. I think Alkins, he'll be an interesting one. You know, I think that we missed out on some time to be able to really watch him. I think that affected his output here this year when he missed those games. I don't really know where he really fits in the league. We'll see. Mitchell Robinson's obviously one that we have no idea what to expect, that you've continued to keep up there. And I know, you know, a guy who has so much potential.
You know, the thing with Mitchell Robinson with me is he was down. If you look at 2.0 and 1.0, he was down in the 40s, and I think I might even move in the first one at the beginning of the year when it was kind of ambiguous what was going on with him. I think he was even down towards 100. But what has happened is guys like Troy Brown, guys like Lonnie Walker, guys like Miles Bridges, who are right below him, guys like even Trey Young or Jared Vanderbilt, I'm just going, Hamidou Diallo, I'm going down the line. They haven't separated themselves from anybody. So his decision to take off, it looks like it's kind of working for him, because that's kind of the vibe I got, was he's dropping at the beginning of the year. And now I'm seeing him in mock drafts. Not that I'm not copying anybody's mock drafts, but I'm not the only one who has him that high. I think I would rather just have the upside for a team at the end of the, or just coming out of the lottery, which means you're an 8 seed in the playoffs, that I would rather have somebody like Mitchell Robinson who could potentially change your franchise than a guy like Troy Brown or, you know, Lonnie Walker or whatever, you know, guys that are safer picks. But, you know, you got to make a splash sometimes in those when you're a meddling franchise, when you're a Detroit's not a good example because they have Andre Drummond. But, you know, when you're a Utah, they're not another not good example, but somebody who needs a big man, somebody at the end of the playoffs who needs a big man, you know, Portland. I think I had him going to San Antonio in my first lock draft. I had him going a little lower just because, but I think that, you know, I think that the unimpressive play of some of the guys that were supposed to impress, especially if you look at somebody like Miles Bridges yesterday, who looked like he'd never played basketball before. He just jumped. He just, all he does is, he looked like the Phoenix Suns gorilla. like he was just trying to do put back dunks and miss threes. And that was his life goal. So,
I mean, the other things that I see about your board, Dougie, is, I think it'd be really interesting. Guard play is going to be a huge one that is maybe going to be overlooked a little bit here. I think that opens up the door to guys like Jalen Brunson potentially getting drafted by a veteran club. Yeah. I think that also opens the door up to maybe some other draft and stash type guys over in Europe, although I'm not necessarily up on who a lot of those guys would be. But you know, that is something that I'm looking at, because when you see the board, and I think this is fairly typical of what you're seeing amongst all mock drafts and different things, is there's just not a whole lot of elite guard play, guys who have the ball in their hand. So teams who need a point guard, Colin Sexton, obviously you're going to see somebody taking a shot on Trae Young early, because they're going to have, you know, they might need a point guard. You also could see someone who we haven't seen play real well, like Trevon Duvall, get drafted earlier than maybe he should, just because there's not a lot of great point guards out right now. And no one's really separated themselves or brought themselves to light like Colin Sexton and Trae Young have this year. So obviously we love Jalen Brunson. I'm a huge Jalen Brunson fan. And I think he's going to get put in a really great situation here in the draft. But I think that'll be the interesting piece for me, is we'll see what happens, and not necessarily you know, see where it falls here early, but I think you're going to see some surprises in terms of guard play.
Yeah, no, there is, and you know what, there's a lot of good young European guards. I do pay attention to the Europeans, and I have watched a lot of film on the Europeans, and you're not going to get a lot of first rounders. You might have one if you're looking at a team late. There's going to be a lot of those lates in the 20s where teams are trying to save cap space, and the whole shebang that you have with draft and stash guys, you know, where there's some guys to be had. And just like every year, I mean, you'll find one or two. You know, you'll find a Nurkic, you'll find a Jokic, you'll find a Ginobili, you know, at 60, right? That's that. So, you know, you never know with some of these guys. There's some really, really talented guys. Ilya Kobu, I have 50 at number 50. He's a very talented young point guard. He's going to take a couple years. I could see the Spurs going for him in the second round, as they perpetually look for somebody to replace Tony Parker. Arnaldus Cabolka. There's a lot of the stretch four next Dirk guys in this year's European class. You have what's his name? Boris Simoniak. I'm going to have to work on that name. Boris, he plays for KK Red Star. He's 6'11", 220, but he's a stretch four. He's a Dirk guy, you know. Another wild card that I like is Anthony Simons. I think somebody can pull the string and try. I saw that guy play at Under Armour. I know it's an AAU tournament, but it's got guys. So let's put it this way. Guys that were playing in that tournament that I was watching, Naz Reid, Moses Brown, Silvio D'Souza, who's now on Kansas, and I have ranked 101st actually on this latest blackboard. I'm wondering when they're going to take the plastic wrap off him and actually let him do something. Miss Whitefoot is going to be the death of Kansas. I don't understand. I mean, if he's the only thing I could think of is that they could keep his red shirt, but that's it.
That has passed. He's played. So
yeah. I mean, if there's some way that they could say that he only played one, I don't know how that shit worked. But
nope, there's no way.
Yeah. Okay. So there you have it. So you know, got a guy, Silvio D'Souza. There's more guys there. Guys all over getting Division I scholarships. Anthony Simons was heads and shoulders the best player at that tournament. He was the second best player I saw all weekend to Bull Bull. I did not get a chance to see my man, number one, in Nike, Cam Reddish. He wasn't playing at the session. But, he was the best player I saw all weekend, save Bull Bull. So he's a sniper. He fits well in this game where he's 6'4". But he's long enough to get his own shot. He is a deadly cold-blooded shooter. And if you put him in the G League, get his confidence up, and he could average 35 a game in the G League next year with the way he plays. So I have him as a 28. I think they can do the different things with the contracts when you're drafting late in the first round. I think that started with the guy from Stanford. The guy that everybody used to tell me about on the draft boards, Josh Huestis. Josh Huestis. You can work on my pronunciation. But ever since that Josh Huestis deal that Oklahoma City did, which was basically the first two-way deal, and you're going to be seeing a lot more of that, and the G League is going to be a lot more popping from sources I have as we go along. It's really starting right now, but next year you'll see a real change in the G League where you can kind of take chances on guys like Simons. So some other interesting things, your boy Mitch Cronin, he only has four guys in the Lockport top 500. And I don't think he has anybody in the top 100. I know Cumberland and Evans are close. I think Evans might be in there. Louisville with seven, which means that David Padgett and Rick Pitino is a big coaching difference. And there, a lot of those guys are high. So, yeah. So, check it out. Lockboard 2.0, or 3.0, excuse me. It's on Lock Draft right now. We're working on getting our mobile. Our mobile crashed. So, but there's a lot of information on there. You know, there's a search tool. So, if you're watching Loyola, you can type in Loyola. And you'll see the best players on their team. If you're watching Kansas State, type in Kansas State. You'll get the best. You'll know who to look for when you're watching them play UMBC next time, or whatever. But
if you follow me on Twitter, check out the that player championship board bracket I did. That kind of rolls off of Dougie's. Lock Draft 3.0, really just giving you a guy to key in on. But obviously Kentucky's got 100 of them, and some of these other programs are really good, but and have, you know, plenty of guys to check out on the board. It's a great tool. Dougie spends a lot of time on, not just blowing smoke, but he does a really good job with it, and it takes a long time. Something that he's always done and continues to perfect. So give it a look. Make sure you check it out. Use it for the NCAA tournament. It's great for you hoop heads, and give yourself a chance to really know what's going on.
Trust me, he is blowing absolutely zero fucking smoke. I spent a lot of time on this thing. Literally. I think my kid's upstairs crying, saying, "Daddy, I want to spend more time with you." But I got a board to make. No, I'm just kidding. anyway, so yeah. So what do we got here? We have Barry Brown versus Kevin Knox.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few here. You know, Cluster versus Jordan Caroline. Jordan Caroline from Nevada. We did a interview with earlier in the year. Gotta love us some Fadeaway J24. Follow him on Twitter, Fadeaway _ J24. Give him some love. You know, I love the fact that he's got his team playing as hard as they do. Big props to them. You gotta love the West Virginia Villanova matchup. Obviously, we have Mikal Bridges, but that might as well say Jalen Brunson versus Javon Carter, because that is going to be huge here. I can't wait to watch that. You know, and there's some really good looks.
I really like Villanova in that matchup, just because one of my takes also is that Villanova is one of the best passing teams I've seen in recent memory, in lengthy memory. They move the ball like they're going to get kicked in the face if they don't move the ball to the right place. Like Jay Wright's going to drop kick them if they don't make the right pass. And
Jay Wright's not messing up his suit, so he'll have one of his assistants do it.
Okay, yeah, but whatever. I watched him in that blowout, million-point blowout against Alabama where for some reason they weren't running offense through Colin Sexton again. I don't know what that was all about, but he was yanking people left. I mean, he's not they don't have a deep team, and he is yanking people when they take the slightest worst bad shot, like a questionable shot. He's pulling them. You make the pass, and they move the ball, and they put on a ball movement clinic against Alabama. Holy shit. Some other ones in there, Vince Edwards, Keenan Evans. Those are two guys I really like. I love Vince Edwards as a pro. I think he's a great, great kind of Swiss Army knife forward, kind of play forward every position, or either forward position, and even play a little two if you need to. And just kind of, he does everything. He's a great defender. He got caught up in some foul trouble that was kind of another bullet point on my thing was I hate when refs try and take over games. I know that he was looking at Vince Edwards just saying if he reads on him wrong right now, I'm going to call foul on him, that third foul. Oh, that may be bad. But, yeah, this is a fun thing. We're retweeting it every day at the Lock Draft Twitter account and John, at John Pugliese at Lock Draft. So let's go through and make our picks. Kentucky, Kansas State, real quick.
Kentucky.
We're going to blow through these.
No question. Bruce Weber's done a great job, but Kentucky.
Yeah, I got Kentucky too. Loyola, Nevada.
I'm gonna go with Nevada. Jordan Caroline, what's up?
Yeah. Jordan Caroline, what's up? And it's too much firepower. They do a good. Porter Moser's done an awesome job getting that program from when, like, I used to live in that area in 2012, and I went to a million basketball games, high school, college. I went to 5 DePaul games. I never even thought about going to a Loyola game. And in that short, you know, and it wasn't even the 6 years. They were bad for 3 years after I left there. I mean, in that amount of time, he's turned it around to this. Porter Moser, like, super, super secret sleeper or national coach of the year for the job he's done at Loyola. I know he's not going to get any love for that, but, you know, if they gave out a mid-major coach of the year, he would get my vote probably. What do we got? Florida State and Gonzaga.
That's pretty easy. Gonzaga. One.
Yeah, Gonzaga.
Rui Hachimura, Killian Tilly.
Yeah. And Larson and Jonathan Williams, and they just got size.
You know. Yeah.
And their point guard play. I like Trent Forrest a lot as a sophomore point guard. I think he can make a big leap as an upperclassman and kind of be a leader to those teams. He was on the Georgia Stars team with Wendell Carter that won Peach Jam. He was kind of the leader and leading scorer of those teams with Wendell Carter and Udoka Azubuike and Lowe. But he was kind of the straw that stirred the drink for those teams in AAU. And I can kind of see that as an upperclassman for Florida State coming up, but Josh Perkins is better than him now. So, you know, and they're just an overall more talented team right now. Last one, Michigan, Texas A&M. Who do you got?
I know you got the Aggies. I'm going to go with the Aggies. I just think they're playing so incredibly well, and it's never too late to give the hometown some love. So Aggies for sure.
Right. I just hope they don't suffer from a little letdown, because if you let down against Michigan, you're going to get your ass beat. But and a little bit more tough of a test, Mo Wagner and, you know, but still, I mean, if you're playing Rob and Tyler together – against what, Duncan Robinson, you know, is Abdur Rahman going to guard one of those guys?
I don't know who's going to guard him. You know, Line does such a good job. Yeah. I don't think there's any question that they'll be in a good position here. But,
I think this is going to be a close game. I had them playing Houston, and I thought it would be a little bit more spread out. And really, they should be playing Houston. But, you know, March. But because March, they're not. So we'll go up to the other side of the bracket, Villanova, West Virginia. This is appointment television, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just think Villanova's too good, but don't count out the Huggy Bear.
I, I'm not going to count out the Huggy Bear. I think he's going to have some wrinkles for him. But I think the way that Villanova moves the ball, like I said, that lends toward beating a press. Also, where is this game located? It's in the East. So there's going to be a
strong... I think Boston. Is it in Boston?
There's going to be a stronger Villanova contingent there by a lot than West Virginia contingent. And pressure defense has proven statistically not to travel well. You get in more foul trouble, you know, on the road.
It's in Boston.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever. Either way, I mean, Villanova's going to turn out. West Virginia will turn out too, but even on neutral courts, you're going to get less calls. You know, they play a physical brand of defense. So, yeah. Texas Tech, don't. What do you got?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I wouldn't have probably picked Purdue earlier, but I'm going to pick Purdue.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Texas Tech. I think that, I don't know. I think that they peaked on Saturday emotionally. Purdue did. Purdue, hell of a way for me to talk about my alma mater, huh? One semester though, only. But I think Zaire Smith is an X factor again, and Tommy Hamilton is an X factor because he could stretch arms out deep and hit shots outside. So those are two guys I look at as X factors. Kansas. What am I doing? Kansas. They play
Kansas plays Clemson. Brad Brownell's done an unbelievable job playing without Devontae Grantham, you know, who I loved before he got hurt. But he's done such a good job that, unfortunately, he's playing against Devontae Graham and Malik Newman. And I just think, you know, guards win games, and they're the two guards I'm picking in this one.
You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb on this one. Brad Brownell... I mean, I think he's through coaching for his job, obviously.
Oh yeah.
But I think he's got. I mean, they pulled the entrails out of Auburn. I mean, that game, I believe that game was 70-29 at one point. And I'm gonna expect a big game from Elijah Thomas. Elijah Thomas was at one point a number one recruit. Are a top five recruit in the country. He originally went to Texas A&M, transferred out, and now he's playing really well for Brad Brownell. They also have they have a lot of size, which is Kansas's kind of thing that they're susceptible to. So in my heart of hearts, I think Kansas is the better team, but I think I'm just going to pick an upset. I haven't really picked a good upset yet, so I'm going to take Clemson over Kansas. And our final one is Syracuse going against the most talented team by our lock board standards in the tournament in Duke.
Syracuse. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say Duke. You're going to have two teams playing a lot of zone based on the metrics of past NCAA tournaments. I will pick Duke here, although I did have Michigan State initially, you know, on my bracket. My bracket can be seen in the trash somewhere in College Station. But, you know, what you're going to probably see is you're going to see athleticism and talent reign supreme in this game. You'll probably see Duke really try and push the tempo a little bit and try and get out and run. I think it's going to be a really interesting game to watch. You got two high level coaches, so I think it'll be fun.
Right. I think that for all that Syracuse has gotten out of Pascal Chukwu and their other big guy and Doje and Matthew Moyer, I mean that's just not gonna stand up to Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter. They're probably gonna end up in foul trouble big time. And Duke has 15 zone busters from guys that can shoot over the top of you to Marvin Bagley going jumping over the top of you to Wendell Carter rebounding in his zone, you know, offensive rebounding in his zone. I think it's just way too much. I think this could get out of hand, actually. You know, if you can get out, Trayvon Duvall's big in this game, too, pushing the pace. You know, Grayson Allen pushing the pace. I think Coach K, and he doesn't need my advice, but, I mean, it's pretty simple to see those weaknesses in it. So, we're going to try and get back to you Sunday night, because I think that we might be able to get a normal Sunday night podcast in instead of, I don't know why they play these games until 11 at night. They already have people missing work Thursday and Friday, and they got to make people go into work feeling like shit because they stay up till 10:30 at night watching UMBC get their ass kicked. what a brutal mess. Me and John, or John and I, as I speak in perfect grammar on my podcast, we discussed whether we were going to podcast Monday, which is when we're taping right now, Monday evening, or Sunday evening, and we decided that if UMBC pulls the upset, we're burying the lead. So we decided to go with today and take a deep breath and kind of take in all everything. But, yeah, Lock Draft, damn it. I wish I had DJ MB or DJ Enough in here, but we're doing mad work over here. We got people showing pro matchups. I'm about to post O'Shea Brissett versus Miles Bridges, which might make me want to move Miles Bridges a little bit down in my rankings a little bit more. Look at my Twitter feed. I've been making the guys, making the draft on NBA 2K, and I'm only about 20 guys through because I gotta make sure. I'm only doing guys like Bagley and Ayton and Jaren Jackson, guys that are for sure coming out. And so I took a picture of my top 18. It's a very unobjective way to look at things, kind of, or objective way, excuse me. I kind of just plug in their attributes, and that's what their rating is. So I think Doncic was an 82, and Ayton was an 81, but that doesn't account for potential. So, and Marvin Bagley was a 79. So those are the top three in my NBA 2K making guys. They look good too, man. They look. I got Marvin Bagley's chops. I got Grayson Allen's stupid hair. Oh man, it's good. Anyways, Lock Draft, damn it. Follow us, Lock Draft at Lock Draft. Listen to John on Texags Radio.
Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m.
Tomorrow morning. Actually, this will be going up in the morning, so we're taping Monday night, but you'll get it early Tuesday morning.
And this
so,
is replayed on texags.com as well.
Yeah, so go back-to-back John Puglisi. Listen to the podcast early in the morning, our podcast, and then the Lock Draft podcast, and then tune over to Texags Radio and listen to Gabe and I don't know if, what's his name, Olin?
Olin. Yeah, I don't think Olin will be on tomorrow. I think it's Gabe and I.
And we get hit praise heaped on me from Gabe. Man.
Lock draft, baby.
Lock draft. Holler at us. And we out you.